Welcome back to the Real Talk with Dana podcast, where we talk all things nutrition, health, fitness, and mindset with a healthy side of sarcasm. I'm your host, Dana Montes of Real Food with Dana. I'm a nutritionist and body image coach, teaching women how to heal their relationship with food and their bodies, ditch the diet cycle for good, and truly thrive with real food, one delicious meal at a time. Internet, and welcome back to episode 77 of the Real Talk with Dana podcast. Today we have Caitlin Higgins from Nerdy Nutritionist on the show. She is a new licensed nutritionist, just finished grad school, got her degrees, now she's a real person and all the things, who is talking about her health journey with some mysterious symptoms, food sensitivities, intestinal permeability, and how she figured out what the heck was going on with her body. We're also talking about her experience of disordered eating, from starting with stuff like skipping meals in high school, binging and purging, to more orthorexic behaviors of doing multiple Whole30s in a row combined with sugar detoxes and obsessing over steps on her Fitbit, and how she started to get out of those things. We're also talking about finding the middle ground during this podcast. So this is the kind of elusive no man's land that exists for many people who are dealing with, on the one hand, chronic health conditions that may necessitate a therapeutic diet or some kind of food restriction to prevent flare-ups or some serious symptoms with autoimmune disease. So Caitlin has both Hashimoto's and eosinophilic esophagitis, which we're going to explain in the podcast. But at the same time, these people also have a history of chronic dieting, maybe over-exercising, orthorexic behaviors, all the way to disordered eating or eating disorders. This then becomes really tricky because not only is it a complete trial and error process and a really hard space to get to this like elusive freedom or neutrality or whatever you want to call it, but it's going to look so different for every single person depending on their background, specific health issues or autoimmune conditions, the severity of your symptoms, etc., right? And so that's one thing to keep in mind with these episodes is I'm trying to have more people on the podcast that fit this bill of having dealt with both of these things. And now we're all trying to find what does this middle ground look like for different people. So no matter what, Caitlin, or we talked about this with Paige when she was on the podcast too, no matter what is working for them, sure, that might work for you, but it also might look completely different. So I don't want you to take what any one person says, not only on this podcast, but on any other podcast or any other person that has this kind of experience, just because that is the exact thing that's working for them, even if they do have a very similar background to you of, say, they have Hashimoto's and they also have this background of chronic dieting or eating disorders or wherever it is, even though you have may have some commonality with the symptoms that you're experiencing from the autoimmune disease or whatever it is, that doesn't mean that your general food guidelines are going to look the same, even with those similarities in your health condition. So little offhand topic there. But then with Caitlin's story specifically, throw another massive debilitating wrench into the equation if you have ever experienced some kind of trauma. For Caitlin, it was not only the stress of moving to a foreign country, completely away from home, and some bad breakups, but also losing her only sibling to opioid overdose. So we're chatting about how all of these things impacted her recovery and also the most helpful resources that she used to help get through these tough times. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So for people who have not met you before, please introduce yourself a little bit. So you are a functional nutritionist and Reiki healer. So tell us about yourself and what that means.
So I'm Caitlin Higgins, also known as the Nerdy Nutritionist. I recently earned my master's degree in functional nutrition from MUIH, like you. And I just got my license, my LDN, and my CNS. So I did all those things. And
so you're a real person now.
I am. Yay. Now I can, you know, go do big girl things. And then I also, my second year at MUIH, I did level one Reiki healing. So I became certified as a Reiki healer. And so what that means, okay. So Reiki, essentially, it was It's a healing practice that originated in Japan in the early, late 1900s. And Rei means universal life force and Ki means essence of individual, kind of like Qi in acupuncture. And so what it is, it's just like non-invasive light touch, like on the body. Obviously, you're all clothed and everything. And it can be for people or animals. And so it's essentially like it jumpstarts a person's own energy, like healing. Or healing system through, it aims to like detect and correct any kind of energy imbalances in the mind, body, and spirit.
How did you get into that?
Well, I've always like, not always, but like when I started really getting into like nutrition and like more of a holistic lifestyle, I learned about Reiki a few years prior to starting school. And I was so fascinated by that and also in a lot of different spiritual healing methods in general. I was just very, my mind, I was pretty like open-minded to all these different things. And when I heard about it and I heard that there were some people locally who taught classes, I was like, I jumped on that and I was like, I've got to do this. So, and I also was looking for ways to heal myself because really Reiki, first and foremost, is like for yourself. And that's what we were taught, is to do your self-Reiki practice every single day. To kind of, and it really made a difference in my life.
Cool. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So backtracking a little bit, like why did you get so interested in nutrition to the point where you were like, yeah, this is what I want to do. Like I want to become a practitioner.
So it kind of, it took a while to get there, but so in 2012, 2013, I was teaching English in South Korea and I was at a kind of fork in the road. I was like, I'm going to either resign and stay here another year or I'm going to go back to the States and go get my master's degree. And I knew that I was really into, honestly, I didn't know that I wanted to do nutrition, but I knew that I wanted my master's and I was like, I'm interested in food and all this stuff. And I was looking into it and I'm like, I just chose it. I'm going to do that. But then when I moved back to the States, I moved to Houston thinking I was going to do like your traditional nutritionist degree type thing. I looked it up and it didn't resonate with me, like the traditional, like my plate and the food pyramid and eat the low fat milk and all that stuff. So I was like, I can't do this. So I then searched for schools that were more integrative and had like the same kind of mindset that I did. And from there, it just like I started kind of digging into the research and trying to heal myself. I developed food sensitivities and allergies when I was about 20 years old. So it's been almost a 10-year journey for me to try to figure out, I guess, what foods work for me and to find that food freedom kind of thing. And so I guess that's just kind of what started it all was, you know, trying to heal myself, looking into it and like getting really into blogs and, you know, Instagram and all that stuff. And I started following people and I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. And we can talk about it later, but I was doing like the whole 30 and 21-day sugar detox. And
yeah. Weren't we all?
Yes, we were. So, yeah. But then when I found results for me, as far as I kind of healed myself, I wasn't feeling sick all the time. I was eating really well, whole foods. Yes, I did lose weight, but it wasn't like dramatic at first. I felt really good about myself. And I was like, I believe that I can help other people do the same thing. And my biggest passion, like kind of above all this working with like adults, is working with children and educating them, like working in the lunchrooms and changing the lunchroom food and stuff like that. So I'm just really passionate on that side.
Yeah. Yeah. So what were the kinds of symptoms that you were experiencing that then once you went down this rabbit hole of like research and blogs and everything, you're like, oh, these might be food sensitivities. But what was coming up for you before you figured out that that's what it was?
So basically me and my girlfriend at the time, we were in college, you know, we were going out all the time and eating out and drinking and all that stuff. And, you know, I had that typical college diet lifestyle, cereal, Pop-Tarts and like ramen noodles, right?
And beer. Yeah.
And beer. Yes, of course, beer. And then I started, every time we would go out to eat or I would eat something, I literally felt nauseous. Like my cheeks started to flush. I started getting like lightheaded, dizzy, and I would start salivating and I needed to go throw up immediately. And it was with everything though. I mean, anything that especially, you know, anything with cream or dairy, all the bread things, wine, all the things. It just like made me feel really bad. And so I was like, I don't know what's wrong with me. Like I couldn't keep anything down. And so I eventually went to the doctor and got tested and they came back, but IgE. So if people don't know, that's like your true allergy. I was allergic to everything. I felt like I was allergic to life, you know, bread, milk, dairy, eggs, beef, pork, all the, you know, all the things. But then looking, you know, back now and with the education I have, that would just show that I had like severe impermeability and, you know, I had some gut issues for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was going to ask, like, we know that we're as practitioners, but many people don't realize that when you get one of those tests back and it shows that you have a ton of food sensitivities, it doesn't mean that you're actually allergic to all of those foods. It just means that, well, one, you're sensitive to them right now, but most likely because you have some leaky gut or intestinal permeability going on. And then the answer to that problem of having all these food sensitivities that are causing the symptoms is, okay, let's heal up the gut, and then you'll should be able to eat these things at least in some kind of moderation again. But then it's also backing up from that even more and saying, okay, well, what caused the gut inflammation and leaky gut in the first place? So were you able to figure out what that was?
I would, looking back, absolutely. It was just from a very young age, you know, my family did the best they could, but we ate very, you know, boxed everything, you know, really poor quality food, your hamburger helper, your, you know, taco dinner kits. So I ate really poorly. I also used food as comfort. So I was, and I, looking back and when I was thinking about it today, I was definitely addicted to sugar, like the sugar, salt, fat, all that stuff. And I was very sick as a kid, or just like every year I was on a lot of antibiotics growing up. I was a C-section baby. I mean, I clearly had some immune issues, always had sinus problems, like a lot of pain, a lot of headache. And also I didn't realize this until maybe like a few months ago. I remember that I was I popped in high school almost every day. I popped like 2 or 3 ibuprofens because I had such bad headaches. And so not until obviously like learning about what can cause intestinal permeability and ulceration and all that, but NSAIDs are definitely one of the triggers.
If you guys hear any growling, that would be Bella. I might cut that out. I might not. Surprise. We never know. Cool. Yeah. So actually let's do a little nutritionist stuff here. Okay. Let's talk about some of the other potential causes of leaky gut that can then lead to these sensitivities. So we can just like kind of spitball these because sure. I did a leaky gut and intestinal permeability and food sensitivities podcast episode, but it's been over a year since those. So any like new listeners are like, what are you talking about? You know? So a couple of the things you mentioned already, like very high stress lifestyle, lots of antibiotics as a kid, like popping a lot of ibuprofen and other Advil and Aleve and all these kinds of things, which that was part of my journey as well. Like I'm sure a lot of people have done this in college, right? Like you go out drinking the night before and then you wake up first thing in the morning, like, oh no, I'm not going to eat. I'm just going to like pop some NSAIDs, which are the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. If anybody doesn't know what that acronym is, you chug some water and then you go back to sleep. Little do you realize it is ripping up your stomach lining and your intestines and lowering your stomach acid and all that kind of stuff. And then anything that if you think you have high stomach acid and then you actually have low stomach acid, because those can like mimic the symptoms of each other, and your doctor puts you on Prilosec or Omeprazole, which are the two things that I got put on in college because I was nauseous all the time. But what other ones am I forgetting?
Well, you briefly skimmed through the high stress. I would say that's probably one of the hugest factors is a high stress like lifestyle. Especially like for me, traveling or like moving so many times, going through tons of different breakups, like really horrible ones.
And grad school.
Yeah, grad school. Not to mention that one. I mean, and trying to take care of yourself, it was just, and having financial fears, I think just being really stressed out, worried, anxious all the time is a huge factor. And I'd say another one is poor sleep. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we, especially in high school and college, we have so much homework. We're so busy. We're trying to party and balance work, life, school, that we don't get any sleep. And we beat our bodies up completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you get sick and then you take antibiotics and it like wipes out your gut bacteria. Yep. The one thing I did want to mention about stress too, is we're not just talking about like mental stress. You mentioned physical stress on the body from like traveling and all these other kinds of things. But for all of my athletes out there, if you do intense exercise like CrossFit or spinning or yoga, like core power yoga, or even if you do more of the like steady state cardio type stuff, exercise not only creates tiny tears in your muscles, but it can also create tiny tears in your intestines or in your stomach if you continue to do it at a very high intensity, or even just these like steady state, very long runs and stuff, if you already have a lot of other stress and inflammation going on. This isn't like, oh, I went for one run once and now like I'm, you know, I have leaky gut. Like, oh,
right.
No.
No,
you know,
no,
like
no.
This is a long term, like also have to have a lot of other things going on in your stress bucket kind of thing. But this is something that we have to keep in mind too.
Absolutely. And speaking of athletes, I mean, and now people are, you know, working out fasted and, but they haven't gotten their hormones tested and they don't know how their blood sugar is working. And if you're working out, that is a stress to your body. Maybe if you're just going for a light walk, that's one thing. But if you're doing some high intensity CrossFit, something, first thing in the morning, you haven't eaten, and that's stress to your body. Absolutely. And that definitely can, I mean, high cortisol definitely can cause, you know, wreak havoc to your digestive system.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you have any hormonal imbalances or anything, definitely don't work out without eating food. But the other funny thing about that from more of a like scientific perspective, because a lot of people that are doing this like intermittent fasting or just not eating before they go work out, which is 99% of the time a really bad idea, at least for all of the people that listen to this podcast, right?
Yeah.
But some of the people who are doing that, the reason that they're doing it is they're trying to keep their blood sugar low. So they're not eating in the morning, right? But if you don't eat and then you do one of these high intensity interval training sessions, whether it's, you know, CrossFit, spin, whatever it is, if you test your fasting glucose before that, and it's like, say the normal range is like, you know, 80 to 90 in mm-hmm. the morning when you're fasted, then test it afterwards. I guarantee you, you're going to be in like hyperglycemic, meaning extremely high blood sugar levels, because your body is pumping out all of this cortisol, which mm-hmm. then pulls sugar into your bloodstream to get fuel to your muscles because you haven't eaten. So it has to come from somewhere. So then initially you're trying to keep your blood sugar low, but you're actually making it spike because you didn't give yourself enough food. So just to keep in mind, another reason to not do intermittent fasting among many of the other reasons that I've talked about on this podcast.
Exactly. I mean, and there's nothing wrong. I recommend to my clients to do a 12 hour overnight fast. That's super easy, but that doesn't mean not like these 16, whatever hours. Personally, I don't think it's good, unless you know you have some serious like neurological issue or some kind of condition where you really need it. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, I would recommend getting your hormones tested before you do any of that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it's funny because like we think about, okay, I just ate dinner. Like maybe I'll have dessert or something later, but then I'm not going to eat immediately when I wake up tomorrow. Like I might wait an hour or something.
Sure.
Because I'm just not super hungry right when I wake up. So technically I'm intermittent fasting, but it's like I'm just eating and then waiting and then eating again. You know,
right.
It doesn't have to be this like crazy thing.
Right.
But
the thing is now people, I mean, we've all been victim of it as being so rigid and strict and, you know, go by the rules when like life isn't about that. I mean, it's like push and pull, yin and yang, you know, it's, you've got to just find balance. So,
yeah. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit more about like those periods that we all have all had when we were super out of balance. Right. So before we really get into that, tell me more about what were the biggest influences on your relationship with food and your body growing up?
Oh, I don't even know. My biggest influences for my relationship with food. I saw food as a complete like comfort. It was, I got so excited to go out to eat. Like we, as a family, we would go out to eat maybe two or three times a week, which is, you know, granted this was like Chili's and Applebee's and like really junky food or fast food. So I would get really excited because it was like, I guess that was how I was either rewarded or the only thing that I just found comfort in. And then I, from a very young age, I did not like my body. I remember around 7 or 8 years old, I started having thoughts about how I thought I was fat and how I thought that I was just like, I didn't like the way I looked, but it was also had something to do with, no offense to my mom, she's amazing, beautiful, whatever, but she was a very thin, beautiful woman. And I was going, starting to go through like about to hit puberty phase, and I was just like chubby, and in a couple like guys in school would make fun of me. You know, we kind of all go through that. And so I think it stuck with me for a long time. But I think inside, had a little bit of body dysmorphia. I would look in the mirror. Inside, I felt like a really small person, but when I looked in the mirror, I wasn't, and it just really messed with my head. So it was a really a big challenge, and I've had that, you know, ever. It's been a struggle, I'm going to be honest, ever since then, throughout, you know, high school, college, and then eventually, you know, now I'm in such a much better place, the best place that I've been my whole life. So
yeah cheers to that. Yeah. With nothing, we're currently we have no water, we ran out of kombucha, we'll refill those
yeah,
later. But yeah, so how did that manifest, like when you were going through middle school, high school, college, like what did that look like in terms of, like, did it change your eating behaviors, your exercise behaviors, that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. I wasn't active really as a kid, until high school. I was, you know, I still didn't do sports or anything. I was in color guard. That was as active as I got. I did some dance, but it wasn't until my senior year, I was like, I begged my parents to give me a gym membership for Christmas. Like, that's all I wanted. And so of course I get my first gym membership. I'm there like every day, start spin, but I wasn't eating well. I just, you know, I wasn't educated. I didn't grow up really eating quote unquote healthy food. Our vegetables came from a can or frozen, you know, definitely your stereotypical Southern food. But I noted, like, starting in middle school, I would start to restrict. Even if it was like Wendy's cheeseburger, I would get it. I would eat very, very slowly, to the point where I'd literally take a bite, put it down, maybe wait a couple minutes, take another bite, so that I would just start feeling fuller quicker, and I would try not to finish any of my food. So, but it was like, it wasn't all the time. It was just like kind of up and down. I really didn't think about it like as an eating disorder or a problem. I didn't really even realize I had disordered eating problems until like maybe the last few years. I wasn't aware of it. And then in high school, I remember actually just being like, I'm done. I hate the way I look, you know, definitely not good, you know, self-care there and like self-love. But I would restrict. I was like, I just stopped eating for like a few days. And then I remember like one night at like 10 p.m., I was starving. And when everybody was asleep, I just went into the pantry and grabbed and like ate like a whole tube of Pringles, you know? It was awful. And then throughout there, and especially in college, it kind of coincided with all of my food sensitivities and allergies, because I couldn't tell if it was like I'm having a reaction or I just ate too much and I need to make myself throw up. I started making myself throw up a lot more. And so I would either restrict or binge purge, all of those things. It wasn't really like one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then when did you start to realize that it was a disordered eating behavior, or that it, at least that it was something that I don't want to do this anymore. I realize that this is not a sustainable, healthy behavior. How can I get out of this?
Well, it was actually like, I didn't even go into like all of it. So it was, I kind of stopped doing that when I started this whole nutrition journey. And I was more like, oh my God, I found like Whole30. And see, I didn't know that these things could trigger even more disordered eating. So I basically, I did my first Whole30 in like 2014. And then right after that, I did like a sugar detox, and I lost a significant amount of weight, but I wasn't athletic, and I just started working out like 2 a days when in Korea. I started walking everywhere. I was obsessed with my Fitbit, getting like 12,000, 15,000 steps a day. And if I didn't, I would literally walk around my house until I got those steps. I weighed myself every day. So it became really obsessive. And I actually went from more of a binge purge restrict. Well, I was still restricting to more of an orthorexic type life, you know, whatever pattern.
Mm-hmm.
I refused to eat anything that was unclean. I basically was a dogmatic bitch to everybody. I would judge the shit out of them if they weren't eating like organic and they were eating all the things, because like I had changed my life so much. I had finally lost you know, all the weight that I wanted, thinking I was going to be happy with myself. And no way, you know, spoiler alert, like you say, like, no, I wasn't happy with myself. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's when I came to school, you know, maybe my second year, I realized, like, why am I doing this? You know, I'm learning about all this. I need to nourish myself, you know, and so I'm healthy, because I don't feel well. You know, I was at the peak of like my anxiety and my depression and all the things. And I felt worse than I ever had at my lightest, at my skinniest. So I was like, something needs to change. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what were some of the steps that you did to try and get out of those, like using those kinds of diets or protocols or heavy air quotes, lifestyle changes that they call them now, right?
Yeah.
Those things that like we all kind of went into, there are a lot of people who are in the same, I did the same thing, right? I had an eating disorder, I had these very disordered eating behaviors. And then I was like, ooh, I'm going to use the Whole30 and 21-day sugar detox to like heal my relationship with food. No, just became like way more orthorexic, right? Mm-hmm. And it became then these foods that I wasn't supposed to be eating on those then became the foods that, oh my God, if I eat these, I'm so incredibly unhealthy. I'm going to gain so much weight.
Yes.
Because then they also equate with weight with health, which we know is not the case.
Right.
And then like all of these other controlling behaviors then spurned from that. And then it's like, okay, well now I acknowledge that I'm stuck in this cycle, that I'm doing 6 Whole30s a year.
Yes.
And that this is not helping at all. It's not helping me break this cycle. How did you start to get out of that?
Well, I guess because of my health still, like I have to avoid, I didn't say this earlier, but with EOE or eosinophilic esophagitis, and I was diagnosed with Hashimoto's. So I've had a lot of diagnoses. So I've had to still modify my diet with basically, I guess if you want to say the 80-20 rule or something, like I mostly just really try to follow a, you know, avoiding foods, inflammatory foods that will really trigger me. But like you mentioned last week, how it's really hard to find that like middle ground between doing your autoimmune paleo, low histamine, 8 food elimination, because literally that's when I feel my best, is mm-hmm. when I like really am on point, you know. And as most of your listeners know, it's not like, you know, I'm eating a bunch of pizza and that's what I want. No, it's like, I don't eat quinoa. That doesn't make me feel good. Or oats even don't make me feel good. And you understand that. So it's like, it's trying to find like, okay, this special occasion, I'm definitely going to have, you know, some other food that I normally don't, but mm-hmm. it's still a struggle. I still am like, man, I really wish I could have that. I wish I could, you know, that kind of thing. But I've just, you know, done a lot of spiritual, like personal spiritual kind of healing practices, a lot of prayer, self-Reiki. I've also been working, number one, with the therapist. go therapy. And that's worked wonders. And recently I started seeing a spiritual healing therapist. So we do a lot of like, we break up a lot of past trauma and a lot of limiting beliefs and things like that with breath, mm-hmm. a lot of breath work and kind of like using a lot of, you know, spiritual kind of my God, you know, my higher power to help break that up.
Yeah.
So that's been really helpful. And just, it just takes time, really. It's the time. It's seeing that every meal is nourishing me. Even if I decide to stuff my face with like 4 spoonfuls of sunflower seed butter. And, you know, again, like people are like, that's nothing. But like for me, it is something, you know, it doesn't necessarily make me feel so good. But when I do it, I'm like, it's fine. You know, mm-hmm. I don't have to go run 3 miles now to work that off or anything. Like my body clearly needs it. And I didn't mention this before, but I lost my period in 2014 because I got so skinny. And I recently, like it's 2019, I've had 3 cycles now, like back to back. And because I'm 20 pounds heavier than I was at my lightest, and I'm happy about it. Like, I'm like, yay, go me. I have my vitality back. I'm healthy. Like, this is what it means to be a woman. Mm-hmm. And for the longest time, I was like, yay, I don't have my period. I'm not in pain.
You
whatever,
don't have to
whatever.
Buy
yeah, exactly. But then I was like, okay, now I have like thyroid problems.
Yeah, all these hormonal issues.
All the hormonal problems. So I was like, you know what? I'll take the 20 pounds to get my period back, mm-hmm. to be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. And to get your health back.
Yeah.
And like happiness back,
yes.
basically, too.
Yes.
Yeah, so when you were talking before and you were like, I did Whole 30 and I turned into a raging bitch. I don't know if you've seen the Trey Kennedy video that's like people when they go on diets.
No.
So his opening, he's a comedian. I'll link this in the show notes. But his opening line is like, yeah, I'm doing Whole 30. It's where I'm an asshole for 30 days. Like, yep.
Well, you said like, you mentioned like doing six Whole 30s in a row. Like I literally, when I started Whole 30, I did a Whole 30, but then I never stopped Whole 30. Mm-hmm. It wasn't. It just, that was my lifestyle. And even until like a year ago, when people say like, well, how do you eat? I'm like, well, I eat clean. No, but this was like before I kind of shifted like my mindset, like to really heal myself. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was kind of still unhealthy, you know, a little bit restrictive up until like 2017-ish, 2018. And I would be like, I basically eat Whole 30. Like, that's what I do. I said that. To many people.
Yeah.
Just for them to like get a visualization.
Or they're like, well, I just eat clean. And it's like, so okay.
Your food's not on the floor.
Right. Yeah. Your food isn't on the floor. You're not eating dirty laundry. Yeah. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a big part of the problem is like, there's so much morality that's tied up in food. And then there's so much messaging around like good and bad foods and yes and no foods and mm-hmm. diet culture and even these things that now purport to be like, it's not a diet, it's a lifestyle change. So like, you're telling me to do this forever is what you're saying, basically.
Yeah.
And so people assume that you're always supposed to be doing something. You know, you're always supposed to be doing something to control your food in some way because we have been habituated that if you're not doing some kind of diet or some kind of plan, then you're completely off the rails.
Exactly.
And you must be so unhealthy and so lazy. And so I guess this question too, and people are like, wait, so you don't like, you're not doing a diet. Like, how do you eat? And I'm like, I just eat what makes me feel good.
Right.
And it took me a while to get there.
Exactly.
Right. It's not like it just happens overnight. It's not like you can go standard American diet and then just like, okay, I'm just eating what makes me feel good, because you don't know what makes you feel good. You know, you have to go through that journey of figuring out what are the foods that make me feel good? Because for a lot of people, that's going to be nutrient-dense foods. And then from there, it depends on what health conditions you have, what
exactly.
lifestyle choices you make, right? Because if you have an autoimmune disease and you have this stuff going on with your esophagus and like all of these other things, you can't just eat whatever you want because it's going to put you in like physical pain.
Exactly.
If you eat it. And then that's not like the freedom that we're talking about with food. That's pain, right? So it's
right.
trying to figure out the freedom and how to have the least amount of restrictions as possible within your new set of like guidelines.
Right.
Where for it's interesting because like your set of guidelines for someone else that might seem super restrictive, but if they were to eat like you, but then they were to try these other things, they wouldn't be in pain. So like they can include those other things.
Exactly.
But it has to be different for every
that's
person.
That's the thing. Like that's what with this, it's now I just don't say, it's hard. It took me a while too to like say I'm not on some kind of thing but when people still ask, like it's, I don't even know what to say. I basically, all I say is like, I eat vegetables. I eat like good quality meat. That's what I eat, you know, because that's what makes me feel fine. And I no longer restrict like the starchy carbs and sweet potatoes, like because of what I have, those actually, and like hormonal problems, you know, those actually make me feel good. And yeah, sure. Like it might change my body composition, but you know, it makes me feel fine. I'm not
mm-hmm.
having some kind of reaction. So exactly what you're saying, like on a low histamine diet, you really like bananas, avocado, spinach, all of those things are healthy, right? Heavy air quotes,
mm-hmm.
like, but those things can trigger me, you know, and bone broth, that is like, you know, gold, you know, liquid gold. And I technically have reactions to that. So I have to stay away from stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Talk more, because we kind of glanced over this a little bit. Talk more about the esophagitis thing, because I don't think people will know what that is.
Yeah. So actually, I'm wondering if people have this and they just don't know it, because I've had these symptoms for a long time. First, it was like in my, maybe back in 2014 when I had some blood work done, my eosinophil count was really, it was high. And ever since then, it's been high, you know, but of course, conventional doctors, they don't ever say anything like, oh, you're fine. You're just
like,
a little bit outside.
You had like a bacterial infection
yeah.
at some point in your life.
Sure.
So for people who don't know, eosinophils are a type of white blood cell that's usually raised if you had some kind of either parasite or bacterial exposure or something like
yeah.
that.
So it's usually parasite or allergy
mm-hmm.
is what it is. So And so I got actually my stool tested and I didn't have any parasites, even though I've traveled, you know, and I've definitely had some bad days, you know, in Vietnam and Philippines, but no parasites there. And so I've gotten tested and I have allergies and I avoid these foods, but still, eosinophilic esophagitis is basically where you have extremely high eosinophil count in your esophagus, but you can have eosinophilia in other organs and other tissues of your body. So, but this one actually, it's quite dangerous because you can eat something. Oftentimes it can be like a bolus of meat that's not chewed up really well. A lot of times supplements like large pills can make you feel like you're choking and you can't swallow your food. And so the only treatment right now is PPIs. So I actually went on like this trial of it, like a 6 week or 8 week thing of PPIs to see if I'm PPI responsive. And I actually am. So it does work. It's good to know that if there was something like really, you know, if I was like in the middle of a reaction that I could probably take a couple and it could like calm things down. Mm-hmm. But right now there's really nothing else you can do holistically. It's just an 8 food elimination and a low histamine diet has been the only thing. I've dug into the research on PubMed to see what things are out there, and that's really all that we have right now. So
time to create your own protocol. You'll be famous soon.
Yeah, right? So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, you have to, and it's different for everybody. So, but those are my biggest triggers.
Yeah. And then how are you able to navigate now that you know what your trigger foods are and that there are certain foods that you have to avoid? And for other people, like, it may seem super restrictive, but at this point it doesn't seem very restricted for you anymore, because when you don't eat these foods that you're restricted from, you don't have these physical symptoms. You don't feel physically ill. So you feel like a lot more freedom within those guidelines. But how did you get to that place without falling back into the, like, this is good and bad, like yes and no kind of disordered eating orthorexic trap of things?
Well, it was really, I mean, once I got that diagnosis, I was like, this is no joke. Like, I'm not, whatever. Like, it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, I just, I was like, I need to do this. It makes me feel better. This is dangerous. I need to fix what's going on at the root cause. There's still some kind of like root issue going on, whether like it's an allergy that I don't know. I'm still intaking something that really doesn't suit well for me. Maybe it's, you know what I mean? It could be coconut, and I eat a lot of coconut, you know? And so I'm not fully healed, and like probably with my gut and all that, and I'm still working on that with different protocols. But I really just was like, I'm going to do this. It doesn't really make me feel restricted anymore because I do feel so much better. I don't know if that really answers your question.
Yeah.
Just kind of, for me, it wasn't like life or death, but I mean, it could be, you can really have a bad reaction and go to the hospital for it. So.
Yeah. Well, it's good to hear that, because I think what's really helpful about having a venue to share your story with people like this is there's no one answer for everything, right? Because sure, a lot of people come to either listening to this podcast or following either of us because they do have this history of either chronic illness, autoimmune disease, disordered eating, all this kind of stuff. And really what they're looking for is different examples of stories on kind of like how to find your way out of it.
Right.
So there's no right or wrong answer. I mean, I guess the only like wrong answer is just keeping going back to those things, like the controlling your eating, the overexercising as your only coping mechanisms, and just trying not to move forward at all. Like, I don't ever want to say anything's wrong, but that's definitely not moving you in the right direction.
Right direction. Right? Yeah. So I basically, I mean, moving forward, things that I've also done, I had to just have a lot of, give myself a lot of grace, you know, when, you know, being extremely fatigued and not wanting to get out of bed instead of beating myself up, like, I need to be going to the gym. Oh my gosh. Like, you know, shifting this whole calorie counting, you know, over, you know, exercising mindset to just like, my body clearly needs rest, you know, and I need to gain weight and I need to not eat those foods. And if I do, again, if I eat a little bit of something that's not really low histamine, because again, this isn't, it's really, really difficult. This particular diet, if you want to call it that, like whatever, it's really difficult to follow because not only do you have to avoid certain high histamine foods, but you also have to cook everything fresh, you know, because when meat sits out, the longer it sits out, it creates more and more histamine, and that's what can cause more of a reaction. So it's just, you have to be really proactive. You have to do a lot of food prep and all that. And to a lot of people with eating disorder, that could be a trigger. But for me, it was just like, you know what? This makes me feel good. I don't feel restricted by it. I don't feel like I'm controlling my food. Mm-hmm. It's literally like what makes me feel my best. Like I actually have energy in the morning to wake up and just like do things, you mm-hmm. know? But on those days when I was at my lowest with like having, you know, Hashimoto's or, you know, just being depressed or grieving or whatever, I just was like, you know what? I'm going to lay in bed all day and not make myself do anything.
And that's okay.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. that's really okay. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to switch gears a little bit, although you did mention this a tiny bit in what you just said, is how there are different things that can play a major role in your health, and especially when we're talking about autoimmune disease, like the trigger that really sets everything off. So we know that trauma can play a really big role in your health, and I know you mentioned that you really wanted to talk about this. So could you talk about that side of your story and how your particular trauma like really played into your health?
Absolutely. So I had a few kind of, I just want to throw this out there. Any big life event, it may not be a trauma in a negative way, but it is a stress, like we already talked about, but it can be sort of a trauma when you move out of the country, out of state for the first time, you have a horrible breakup, whatever. So I had that, but then when I moved back to Atlanta, my brother, my only sibling, he just turned 30, he passed away of a accidental opioid overdose. And I know that you've talked about this in some of your podcasts. So that was super devastating. Obviously, I was in a really good place. Like I had just moved into my own apartment with my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, we were doing really well. I was good with my job. And then that happened. And it completely, I had to quit my job. I had to move back in with my parents. You know, I was just dead. I felt like dead. And so that the stress or not, I don't even know if it was the stress, but the stress of trying to maintain a happy persona in front of my mom, being the strong person, I felt like that stress and trying to go back to school and do all these things, it really wreaked havoc inside of me. And I definitely had a lot of, you know, depression and anxiety along with that. But I started eating and coping with food again. So again, I think that plays into it. So your mental health, I mean, when you're depressed, anxious, granted, like, you know, lean into it, like allow it to happen. Don't try to avoid it. But in my case, you know, using food as a comfort, I was definitely eating certain things that I shouldn't, that like truly didn't do well for my body. So that also just continually perpetuated my like health problems, if not made them worse. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were the biggest things that helped you with that?
I allowed myself to eat those things if that made me feel better in the time. And I really, you know, I just really relied on like God and like my spiritual life and
go therapy.
Yeah. And therapy. Absolutely. And I became very vulnerable. I started asking people for help. Mm-hmm. I started telling my story. I started allowing myself to cry, you know, because I feel like just in our society, we're told not to do any of those things. Like mental health isn't real. Depression isn't real.
Yeah. You have to be superwoman. Yeah, you can't show emotions.
Basically. It's like a complete 180, like who I was before that and who I am now. Like I just am very vulnerable and I just kind of tell my story and I'm open. And yeah, many people know this about me, but I pretty much am like anti-pharmaceuticals. Although now, like going through school, like being educated, like we definitely need those and thank God for them. So I was against getting on any kind of SSRI or antidepressant for years and years and years. Like I've struggled with depression. It runs in the family. Since like at least high school. But I refused once I started getting into this whole holistic mindset. I was like, no, you know, they're the devil. They'll cause so many problems. But I got to the point where I was like, basically this grief that was inside of me caused like such deep depression that I was basically suicidal, like almost every day for a period of time. And like 2017, and then again like last year in 2018. And so I was like, you know what, my life is more important and my parents need me, even though certain days it was like, why, you know, we go through like, why am I here? What's the purpose of life kind mm-hmm. of thing. And especially like wanting to be with my brother. Like I always thought about that, wanting to be with my brother. And so I just was like, you know what, I'm going to try an SSRI. And it really did work. It really helped me. It helped me get out of that really dark place. And so for those people who are like super anti that, but they're in like, you know, such a dark place, I would recommend doing it. It's only temporary. So that also helped me.
Yeah, you know. For sure. Well, thank you for sharing that. Yeah. I know it's not easy to talk about that. No. So going back to talking more about like resources and stuff, I always love to give people kind of like we're saying, you know, go therapy, best thing for everything, right? But different resources that people can use at different points in their journey, you know, depending on where they are. So like if they're looking for, and you can kind of categorize these if you sure. want to, but like if people are looking for information on say Hashimoto's, or if they're looking for information on like the eosinophil thing with the esophagus or any of the disordered eating and stuff, like what did you find were the most impactful resources, whether that was books or podcasts or using PubMed, or was it like, I don't know, alternative therapies? Like obviously Reiki has been really mm-hmm. important and helpful and healing to you on your journey. So what would you say like some of the most impactful things you've used were?
Definitely. I'm like such a nerd, as you know, like PubMed.
That's why we go back to school.
Yeah. So PubMed, I definitely like for, you know, the Hashimoto's and the eosinophil, like all of that stuff, I would do that. But I also followed Allison Vickery. She is brilliant when it comes to low histamine. She has like a whole protocol, and I can send you that link or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You want to link that on the show notes. Mm-hmm. Just like to follow if you have any kind of eosinophil issues or just have a like histamine intolerance basically. Let's see. Other than Reiki, I just did a lot of meditation. I downloaded an Insight Timer app, and it's brilliant because it's like, you know, categorized by time and like different topics, depression, motivation, you know, morning routine, whatever it is. And just setting like that kind of routine for myself really helped me. And specifically for my brother and kind of working through that, which I still work through every single day. But it's kind of going to a place and being willing, like, and open to talk about him, you know, mm-hmm. or kind of go to the same place every day and kind of just like set up my own little routine. So if people want to do that, I would recommend, you know, trying to figure out whether that's journaling. I journaled every single day just to get my thoughts out there because, you know, when we don't have access to talk to people or people to listen, at least you can write it down. Mm-hmm. So that was probably the most impactful, was journaling. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there any books or anything that really helped you get through like the grief or the trauma or anything? Because I haven't really talked about that too much on the podcast.
But. There's a book, I think it's like Body Keeps the Score, is a really good one about trauma and how it actually gets stuck and like lodged in our body. So like actually I've been working, I've worked a few times with like some acupuncturists and some massage therapists to kind of get out some of those, and craniosacral therapists. Like I've done all the things, I feel like, but to kind of dislodge some of those traumas that are stuck in. It's like any kind of muscle memory. Like when we do something, if you like get hit and you like tense up and like maybe you're sore in your shoulder forever because of that one instance, that can kind of like grief can be held in certain parts of our body. And especially mm-hmm. in like ancient Eastern, you know, in Chinese medicine, they believe in that. So I've been working, acupuncture helped tremendously. And then as far as books, Body Keeps the Score. Let's see. Right now I'm reading one like by Jen Sincere called You're a Badass, but that's just basically, I don't know if you've read that one, but it's basically just like really empowering to kind of step in your power. And then for the other like Digestive Wellness by Liz Lipsky, you know, it's just like a bunch of school books.
It was one of our professors. Yeah. Shout out to her.
Yeah, she was amazing. So that really helped with like my digestive stuff. But I can't really think of books right now off the top of my head because I just graduated. I haven't read any books yeah. for fun, like or you know, for semi pleasure at all. Except right now, it's like the You Are a Badass book, which I love.
Yeah, which is great. Also, yeah. That is great on audio because she reads it, and she's so funny.
I bet she is.
She's amazing. Highly recommended that on Audible as well. Yeah, I mean, that's the crazy thing about grad school. And I remember this about college, that I used to love reading growing up. Like, I was such a bookworm. I mean, you guys know I'm fully obsessed with Harry Potter. But I just basically stopped reading in college, except when I was like on vacations with my family or something. And then the same thing happened in grad school. And I was like, oh my God. So as soon as I graduated, I was like, yes, I'm going to start reading again. Yeah. So I use Goodreads to like keep track of all my books and everything. And now I'm, again, fully obsessed with reading. Like, I have so many books over there that I can show you that just like, I get so excited about reading and I'm such a nerd and it's fine.
No, I love it. Like, I used to do, I was on Goodreads too, and I had like a goal to read like a couple books a month. And like, you know, but when you don't have a job or like whatever, it's easy. But no, like in grad school and working and all the things, like, it's really hard. Oh, I did want to mention something that really helped me. Highly recommend is Woman Code by Elisa Vitti or something. That blew my mind. That really helped me as far as like getting my period back or just like focusing on, you know, hormones and getting, you know, balancing your hormones.
Yeah, I have that over there. That's actually on my list to read next.
It's so, so that's good. Yeah.
Cool. Why don't you tell people, if they want to find all things about you, where they can find you?
Okay. Well, my Instagram handle is Nerdy Nutritionist, but there's a period in between the two words. So Nerdy, period, Nutritionist. And then you can find me on my website if you want to work with me at www.nerdy-nutritionist.com. And then I will be starting a blog soon. Yeah. So be on the lookout for that.
Awesome. Yeah. And I'll link all those things in the show notes, so you guys don't have to like mistype them in, because I was trying to look up your stuff before and there's so many different variations of Nerdy Nutritionist. I was like, oh, that's a bummer. Yeah. So if you guys want to find her, look up the stuff in the show notes. I will link everything there and then you can go find all things Caitlin.
Thanks for listening to Real Talk with Dana. If you enjoyed the episode, please share it with your family and friends and share the love by throwing us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which will help spread the word and do a small part to correct all of the fitness and nutrition misinformation or bullshit that's out there, which is only causing people to become more unhealthy. Come find me anywhere at Real Food with Dana on Instagram and Facebook. Join the Real Talk with Dana Facebook group for more support and discussion on these episodes, and come hang out over on realfoodwithdana.com for the show notes and totally epic and delicious recipes.